live in an era where we feel that we are entitled to pursue our desires, because this is the culture where I deserve to be happy.
It seems like most people all want the same thing. We want to be loved. We want to be treated well. We want them to care as much for us as we do for them.
Let me tell you something. God's way works.
Monogamy used to be one person for life. Today, monogamy is one person at a time.
Of all activities on the internet, porn has the most potential to become addictive.
Relationships are the single most important thing to you in your life. It's the source of all of your best memories. It's the source of all of your worst memories.
My name's Bex, and I've been single since I was 21, and now I'm 26. The fact that there isn't a special someone who's really close to me means that I have to rely on my friends, and it brings a depth of relationship that I think may not necessarily have been there if I hadn't been single. It's important to realise that that this is serious stuff, particularly the older I get, the older other people get. You don't want to mess people around. Like, maybe in the beginning we all look for like a long list, and it's all a bit immature, isn't it? So, you know, tall, dark and handsome and all of that. And I think that's one way of looking at it. I think if we were all honest with ourselves, we want someone we're attracted to. And that encompasses that list of qualities. But for me, I'm often thinking what's the most important, what's closest to my heart. And I think that's one of the things that's closest to my heart, is to be emotionally articulate with someone and then for them to reciprocate. I refuse to pause life and not live life to the full. I don't want that to be me. And I don't think that's particularly attractive either. I think that people always say, be the person you're looking for is looking for. I want to be the best version of me that I can be, and that's all about embracing what God's teaching you. I do feel that this is a really valuable time I'll look back on, and I don't want to look back with regret. I want to look back being proud that I've travelled and I've experienced life and embraced things that I wouldn't have been able to embrace if I'd been in a relationship and have time for people. You can look at it really negatively. It is frustrating. It is hard. But I know it's like the whole tapestry thing. It feels like God is teaching me, God is shaping me, and I'll one day look back on this and the tapestry will make sense. It'll be a further back perspective, and I won't look at that and go, well, that was a waste of time. I'll look at that and be proud and honoured that God taught me those things and shaped me. So I think it's a vital time. It's not easy, but it's vital. I don't quite understand how people do it who haven't got a faith, because you must feel like you're in some sort of random, turbulent storm. I don't think it's easy. I don't think singleness is easy. I don't want to be single. But I can see the strength that it's teaching me. I do not want to pause life. I want to fully embrace it, and I won't let singleness stop me.
The Bible is surprisingly open about sex. It's surprisingly frank about sex. It's surprisingly pro-sex. I said last week that God is not just pro-sex, but even more than that, he's pro-you. The whole idea that sex is God's invention, rather than just allowing us to reproduce asexually by cloning ourselves. God says, no, I've got this great thing, and it's going to be powerful, and it's going to be wonderful, and it's my gift to you. Just to prove what I'm talking about, did you realize this book in the Bible, a whole book in the Bible, and it's just an erotic love poem. There's no mention of God. There's no mention of faith. There's no mention of sacrifice or the temple or the people of God. It's just a story about a girl and a guy. And it is amazing. It's powerful. In fact, in some traditions, the old rabbis, the old Jewish teachers, they said, look, this thing's so out there that people that are under 30 years old shouldn't be allowed to read it. Because it's just going to get all kinds of ideas and it's going to be crazy. But it is, it's a beautiful book. I would really love to encourage you to read the book Song of Songs. And you might need to look up what the grapes stand for and what the fruit represents and what the coconut is. But basically, you get the gist. You get the gist that this is something, and it's written in a very pure way, but it's written in a very frank and honest way. I'm going to take you through it, and you're going to wonder what this has got to do with singleness, but bear with me, because it will become clear. Basically, the book opens, and it's told from the perspective of a woman. This is a woman who's got kind of desires and longing, and she falls passionately in love with this guy. And it starts with this. This is literally the beginning of the book. It's the most amazing book opening you can imagine. It says this, Solomon's Song of Songs. In other words, Solomon was one of the ancient kings of Israel. This is about 1,000 years before Jesus Christ. He basically wrote over 1,000 songs. But he said, this is the best song. This is the song of all the songs. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. For your love is more delightful than wine. And if that sounds familiar to you, if you're old school, you'll know that that is a song that Madonna ripped off. Kiss me with your lips. Your love is better than wine. Know that one?
Yeah.
No? Oh, Matt, come on. Madonna's a person your granddad used to like. Okay. But it's steeped into modern culture. But essentially, you have the first two chapters of this woman finding a man, the lover and the beloved, and the day they just pour into each other's hearts all this kind of adoration and I love you. I'm so into you. You're so hot and you're so amazing. No, you're so amazing. And oh no, you're teasing. And it goes on like that. And then in chapter 3, there's a little bit of a kink in the relationship where she gets a little bit insecure and she thinks, well, does he really love me? Is this really real? But they get through that and then you see them have this incredible wedding and they get married. And then in chapter 4, the whole of chapter 4, listen, you're reading off songs, read chapter 4. I've been censored. Chapter 4 is amazing. Because in chapter 4, it's literally, the whole chapter is their wedding night. And it's very, very forthright. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on there. And it's just, you know, you're a walled garden, my bride. Well, the garden's open to you, my love. And oh, here I come into the garden and I'm in. And, you know, it's just, it's amazing. And then amazingly, a weird thing happens. At the very beginning of chapter 5, in verse 1, you get this other voice. And up to now, it's just been basically the lover and the beloved. It's been the woman and the person that she loves, her lover. And they've been responding to one another. But then this other voice comes in. He says, eat, friends, and drink. Drink your fill of love. And this is where the genius of the book comes in. Because I said that God isn't in the book. But actually, God is all over the book. He's there in the shadows. He's there upholding the whole thing. He's there nurturing and enabling and facilitating and speaking into their relationship. And it's like after this night of passionate lovemaking, God speaks and God says, have at it, enjoy it, drink your fill. This is good. I'm pro you. This is fantastic and I want you to enjoy this. I'm not the kind of guy that wants to just repress you and depress you and condemn you. I want you to enjoy this. This is my gift to you. Eat and drink your fill. And then in the following chapter, there's another little mirage of what happened before their marriage. There's a little moment, a little wrinkle, where the relationship seems to go through a little bit of troubles and there's a bit of friction, there's a little bit of tension, but they work it through. And then it carries on. It's the best stuff, the best stuff. is yet to come. It's those final couple of chapters when they're going, there's a lot of lovemaking, but there's a lot of kind of appreciation and love and passion and tenderness, and it's just beautiful. And then it ends in chapter 8, and it ends with a kind of, let's take a step back, let's look at the relationship that we've got, and it's a bit of an epilogue, it's a bit of a kind of, what have we learned? What's the important thing to take home? And it is this incredible, it's quite a famous passage, and you may hear it sometimes at weddings, but she says this, under the apple tree, I roused you. There your mother conceived you. I mean, I find it fascinating that 1,000 years before Jesus, you've got the Bible describing sex between husband and wife in a beautiful way, and it's not like the woman's just kind of lying there. The woman is active and participating and initiating, and she's arousing him under the apple tree. And there your mother conceived you. That's kind of odd. There she who was in labor gave you birth. Well, you know, it's a circle of life. But she says, place me like a seal over your heart. Like a seal over your arm. In other words, there's something very beautiful about their relationship. And she's saying, I want your heart to be sealed up for me. I want you to just be mine. I want you to just belong to me. I want you to be all of me. All of me. And I want to be all of you. I want to be in a kind of relationship that has that special seal over our hearts. The love is as strong as death. And this is not the word that is used about erotic love. This is just a general of the love between a man and a woman, the love between friends, the love that you can have for yourself, but also the love that God has for us as people. That word, love, the same word in the Hebrews used over, over, over again. I'm the God who loved you and brought you out of Egypt. But she says, love is as strong as death. It's jealousy, unyielding as the grave. It burns like blazing fire, like a mighty flame. Many waters cannot quench love. Rivers cannot sweep it away. If one were to give all the wealth of one's house for love, it would be utterly spoiled. She said, love is amazing. It's a fire. It's a passion. Waters cannot quench it. It's just something unbelievable, wonderful. I said that you often get these at weddings. I was at a wedding when I was a kid, actually. It was seared into my brain. Because Song of Songs, chapter 8, verse 7, was the verse that was supposed to be read, which is, many waters cannot quench love. Just that one. Rivers cannot sweep it away. But the person reading it was not used to the Bible, maybe like some of you here, and actually read Song of Songs 7, verse 7, which is in the whole sort of making love bit. And basically read out in this wedding, you are like a palm tree, and your breasts are like clusters of fruit. I would climb the palm tree and lay hold of the fruit. I guess it's appropriate for a wedding, but you know, left an impression on me, I can tell you. Now, people think, and if you really, you go find it, you know, the way that the Bible's written, the way that this poem is written, it's art. It leaves a lot for you to interpret, and there's a number of different ways that you can read it. But there's a through line that goes through it. One instance is when the woman, she says, my beloved is mine, and I'm his. My beloved is mine, and I'm his. That's in chapter 2. But it has a through line through to the rest of the song. So in chapter 6, it flips around. And suddenly, she's putting him first, and she's saying, I am my beloved's. I give myself to him, and my beloved is mine. And that's something that carries through. You see the growth of their relationship. You see this thing gathering momentum and picking up energy and burning like this raging fire that the waters kind of quench. This is the bit where it comes to relate to singleness. Because you're wondering, where was he going with all this stuff and clusters of grapes? But there's a refrain that happens more than this one through the poem. Again, again, and again. 3 times. It happens in chapter 2 where the woman says this. His left arm is under my head and his right arm embraces me. Good technique. Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you by the gazelles and the does of the field. Do not arouse or awaken love until its own desires. That moves through into the next chapter, chapter 3. The same thing, the same refrain. Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you, by the gazelles and by the does of the field, do not arouse awaken love until it so desires. And then again in chapter 8, at the very end, after that passage that we've just read, she comes again, and there's this kind of nice mirror image of that thing that was at the beginning of the book. His left arm is under my head and his right arm embraces me. Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you by the gazelles and by the does of the field, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires. Now here's the thing. If you had, in our culture, people, whether it was in a film, or whether it was a book, or whether it was in a magazine, whether it was on a website, a blog, and they talked about how great their relationship was, how fantastic their sex life is, you would expect every time, for them to say, so go for it, it's amazing, it's fantastic, come on in, the water's lovely. You'd expect when people find something that they can do all that they can to it, just encourage people to go for it. Don't hold back. Don't be frightened. Don't let this thing out of your grasp. Just find something. Go for it. Make it work. But actually, here in the Song of Songs, she said, oh, this is so amazing. Oh, I'm so much in love. Oh, this is all that I dream of. Oh, this is so good. Even going into marriage, you know, it doesn't have to die down. The flame doesn't have to die down. In fact, some commentators say that that last chapter, it's well into the future where they've been married for a long time and now have children of their own. But they say, it's so good, don't arouse or awaken love until it's ready, until the right time. In other words, sex is good, but in context. Sex is good, but in the right relationship. They're saying, this is so good, you don't want to do anything that you can to jeopardize this. You want to hold this as precious. You want to hold this as something that is worth investing in. And we said last time that value comes without cost. And we asked the question, what are you willing to invest in your future happiness? Because it's easy to go for the short-term happiness. The thing that's going to give me a buzz right now. The thing that's going to satisfy me right now. But this is what the Song of Songs says. They say, listen. You could do that, and there's nothing wrong with that. We're not going to judge you, but, oh, I charge you, I adjure you. Don't go for it until it's the right time. And what you've got is this. You've got a destination. You've got something that the Bible gives you as a vision of something to look forward to. Here's the thing. Many of us, we've been brought up in a situation where we haven't seen too many good models of a good, thriving, passionate relationship. I don't know what it's like when you grew up in your family. I don't know whether that was a good marriage that your parents had, whether it was a non-existent marriage or whatever. Some of us have had good models, some of us had good things that we can look at, but most of us in today's culture, if you want to think about, you know, this perfect, idealized relationship where you love one another, it's as strong as that, it's passionate, and it's physical, and it's intimate, and it's thrilling and it's exciting and it goes from strength to strength to strength. Well, we just say, that's the movies, it's Hollywood, it's fantasy, it's not going to be real. Look at the stats, look at the fact that, you know, since the sexual revolution, the divorce rate has gone up and up and up. Look at all these people that, you know, they look great, you know, we went to that wedding 5 years ago, but now, you know, they're still together, but they just seem to be like everyone else, boring and dull. And this is what the Bible does in the book of Song of Songs. It says, look, let me give you an indication of what is possible. You think that it's not possible. You think that it can't happen. You think that it's a fantasy. And so you're willing to just go for what is good enough. But here, and it's I know this is a hard thing to say. But here what is being commended is, this is something. In fact, let's put it this way. Ask yourself two questions. First of all, what do I want? Secondly, what don't I want? It's almost as if you say, look, this is something which is possible. Is this what you want? Do you want it to look like this? Or is this something that you know, is there something that equally you don't want? In other words, and it's a bit like Bexa on the video. She says, I don't want to compromise. I don't want to just go into casual relationship. Honestly, someone like Bex, she could be in a relationship at a click of her finger, at a swipe of her phone. She could put her profile up, everyone will swipe right, no problem. But what she's saying is, I don't want just any old thing. And so the idea of thinking, what do I want? What am I willing to hold out for innocence? And what do I not want? What do I not want to compromise on? I want to be really clear. I don't think the Bible talks about a soulmate. And if you saw this thing at the beginning, you'll know, well, you might not know this, but I know this because I had to do all this research on YouTube and the internet to look at those clips. And the guy that speaks and says, you know, we all want to be special, we all want to be loved by someone. That guy is a blogger called Onision. And that particular blog that clip is taken from, he says, you all have a soulmate. So just wait for your soulmate. Don't go ahead. Don't compromise. Find the person that fits you like a glove. Find the one that completes you. This is a guy that's been divorced twice, by the way, just in his 20s. And if you go on his tube, it's kind of interesting. But essentially, he's perpetuating that story. There's a soulmate. Someone that is uniquely crafted to you, but the Bible doesn't say that. The Bible just says, look, there's a relationship. There's a bond of trust. There's something that you can build together. But it's not with some special magical person that just happens to be the right fit for you. And so therefore, wait at home, bake a cake, do some knitting until the right woman comes, the right man comes. But what it says is this. Love, relationship. There's something to aspire to and there's something to think, what do you want? When Kate and I talk to young people that are single and are kind of asking for advice, how do I prepare for this? We often say, make a list. Make a list. But don't make a list that is looking for Miss Right, Mr. Right, you know, the ideal soulmate. You complete me. Don't look for someone that completes you. Look for someone that complements you. Look for someone whose strengths and weaknesses and their desires and dreams mesh and fit with yours. I tell you what, I had a list. And my list was like a typical man list. So it was like, outrageously beautiful, sparkling personality, very low expectations in a partner. And, blow me down, but I found her. She had a list, and it was spectacularly low expectations. It was like, must have his own car. Well, that was easy. Must be able to play the piano. Thanks, Mum and Dad, for putting me through all those lessons. And that was just about it. You know, must be able to spell his own name. But actually, having an idea, I'll tell you the one thing that was on the list for both of us, which enabled us to recognise one another, or recognise something in one another when we first met, apart from, you know, you need the physical attraction, and that's the chemistry, that's important. You know, don't go down that route unless you're really sure. But with us, we have on our list, we want someone that we can do ministry with. We want someone that we can serve God together because we both felt like God had asked us to be involved in the church. And so I needed someone that could be up for that. And she felt the same thing from her point of view. She needed someone that could be up for that too. I need someone that can be, you know, doesn't really care about money. I need someone that can be poor if we have to be poor. Can live in difficult situations if we need to live in difficult situations. Can sacrifice and give and give and give. And essentially, knowing what you want, knowing what you're going for, is so key and it's so crucial. And that's why the Song of Songs, it just says, look, here's an ideal for you to aspire to. But when God gets involved, that ideal becomes a possibility. But the question has to come, what do you do to get there? Is that all the Bible does? Say, hey! This is a great couple. Look, great relationship, great sex. You could have that too. See ya. No, the Bible doesn't say that. The Bible actually goes on. In fact, the chapter 8 that we've just read, it says this. We have a little sister. Now, the language here, it could mean, it could be the couple, as I said, they've had a daughter, they've had children. So we have a little sister, her breasts are not yet grown, which means that she's, you know, she's prepubescent or she's just young, she's not fully grown up. What shall we do for our sister on the day she's spoken for? In other words, what can we do? What can we do as a community? And I think here again, we see the voice of God. What can I do for you? If you identify this, if you've got something that you're aiming for, you're willing to invest in and to make some sacrifice, well, how do we get there? It's not just good enough to have a destination. You need to have a road map. A roadmap to know how am I going to get there. And essentially when they say, we have a little sister, she's not yet fully grown, we've got this little daughter, what can we do for her? And then it comes this amazing passage. It says, if she is a wall, we will build towers of silver on her. Just repeat that with me. If she is a wall, we will build towers of silver on her. Say what? It basically comes back to what we were talking about last week. That sex is designed, I think, to be within a context. You know that that's true. You know that sex where it's not wanted or not appropriate causes pain, causes problems. But what they're saying is, in order for us to handle this gift, we've got to be boundary. And in this case, it's saying, look, if she is someone that can internalize boundaries when it comes to her sexuality, if he is someone that can have a sense of context and what's right and where I will not go, integrity, like a wall, no hole, no gap, no little areas where things can just seep in, but actually someone that has a kind of a boundedness about them, an integrity about them. In other words, if this is someone that makes good choices, continues to live a particular way, willing to pay the price, willing to make the cost, well then, they get a happy relationship. Actually, it doesn't say that. It says, you live bounded, you live within a context, and actually something will happen to you that you couldn't do for yourself. So it's almost like God says, if you are able to learn and work and develop your character, if you're able to make this the kind of person that you are becoming, someone that has a boundary, someone that is trustworthy, someone that has integrity, someone that doesn't just bow to their instant whim, their instant desire for pleasure, someone who gets the fact that you don't just have a sex drive, in fact you don't have a sex need, you have a sex drive. It's not something that has to take over everything, that has to have precedent over you. It's something that can be managed, that can be held, that can be kept in a safe and secure place. And if you do that, if you're willing to walk that road, if you're willing to work out how that looks, well, God says, I will enhance you. I'll build something into you. Build something beautiful. Silver tower on a wall. It's precious. It's beautiful. It's strong. In other words, people that live with good biblical principles become more attractive and stronger in themselves. No matter what happens, whether you get the relationship, whether you get the fairy tale, whether you get that perfect thing at the end of it, even without getting to the destination, and for some of us it doesn't always seem to work out like that, and I've got to be very careful about what I say. But even on the journey, there's something that you can get, something that you can benefit from, which is very powerful, very beautiful, very wonderful. And it's something that gets given to you. A kind of, look at that gleaming glow, look at that depth of character and quality in that person, even if they're sacrificing. And so you have to figure out, how am I going to navigate this? How am I going to go through? When I was 17 years old, I made a decision on this. I decided, right, I was very influenced by this book, and I just thought, okay, I want this. In fact, I'd rather not have anything if I can't have the best thing. I don't want to be Mr. and Mrs. Boring, sat down in their so-so marriage or so-so relationship. I either want to go through it or I just want to, you know, a bad relationship. Sometimes it'd be better to be happy with a good community. In fact, when we did our whole Deal Breaker series and we talked about sexuality, Ed, who came here, look it up on the internet. He came and he spoke about, you know, as a same-sex attracted man, he talked about, I'm always going to be single. There is no destination for me. It's all road. But he said, we in the Christian community, we can do family. And we can do intimacy in other ways. And we have a unique potential and opportunity to be counterculture and radical in a way that, okay, I may not get sex and children and all these things that I was hoping for, but it doesn't mean that I'm a second-class citizen. The guys like Paul in the Bible and the guys like Jesus live perfect, full, fulfilling lives. And they got to be created. They got to receive a gift by God. Towers of silver. And so you figure out. So I just said at 17, I just said, right, I'm not going to go out with a girl. I won't have any kind of those. I'm just going to be single, single, single. No, that's fine. And so 10 years, and it felt a little bit kind of up and down at times and difficult. But 10 years, never even kissed a girl until my first kiss with my now wife. And then I thought, actually, did I really need to do that? I don't know. Because she, on the other hand, she was like, I'm going to live well and I want to be a wall, but I'm going to do it slightly differently. In fact, Kate, you can ask about this. She dated a couple of guys, but she did it in a platonic way, whereby you're going out and you're sort of building relationships, but it's very bounded. In fact, you know, she's incredible, so I don't know how these guys survived. But that's what she went for. You've got to choose, you've got to decide how you're going to do this, how you're going to approach it. So, you live like that, you make the investment. And some of you right now are saying, yeah, it's really great, Philip. What happens if I'm not a wall? It comes next. In fact, before we go on to that, the woman, she's got this thing where she's able to say, I am a wall, and my breasts are like towels. Lest I have become, in his eyes, like one bringing containment. Yeah, good for you. She's got a positive self-image, that woman. But back to the whole thing. If she is a wall, we'll build towers of silver on her. But if she is a door, then what? Well, we know where this is going, right? Okay? You know what Christians are like. You know what the Bible is like. If you blew it, if you're like a door, you know, the opposite of a wall, as in anything goes. You know, you're not, there's no boundary there. There's no boundary. It's just whatever feels good, do it. Whatever I want to do, I do it. And then there was that guy, and I didn't want to be rude, and, you know, I kind of felt a little bit pressured into it. Oh, there was that girl, and I was a little bit drunk, and I just, you know, I'm not a wall. I'm, looks like I'm a door. So, you're a door. You've blown it. You've messed it. So, we expect you right now. If he is a door, if she is a door, cast out. End of story. End of possibility. End of potential. You blew it. You broke the rules. Thank you for playing, but you're out. No, they don't say that. They say, if she is a door, we will enclose her. Enclose her. Well, that's great, isn't it? You know, going to be barricaded up. Going to have bricks and kind of mortar put in front of me to try and sort me out. This person is clearly a person of low moral values. Let's just put something around them and then get all their friends to, no, we're taking you home. And, you know, she's got chipboard all over the place and, you know, board it up. Is that what it means? Here's the thing. This is going to blow your mind. This is going to be the best thing you ever heard. All day, all week, I guarantee. If she is a door, we will enclose her with panels of cedar. The cedar of Lebanon that grows in this one particular valley, which reaches a width of 35 to 40 feet, that grows to 90 feet tall, which is called the royal tree, that they use in the greatest palaces in the ancient world, that they use as part of the purification process in the temple when they want to make someone clean. This is something amazing, something gorgeous. We will take that breach, we will take that brokenness, we will take that mistake, we will take that way that you felt out. We will take the fact that, yeah, you didn't have some great role models. Maybe you didn't think that you wanted to live like this. Maybe you got caught up in stuff. Maybe you had a little bit too much to drink, or you hung around the wrong people, or you really thought he loved you. But there's this gaping thing within your heart. Oh, I can panel it up with cedar. Make you like a palace. Make you beautiful. We call this roadside recovery. Roadside recovery on the journey. And you get to collaborate with God. You say, how can I collaborate with God? Because God says, I want to make it right. I don't condemn you, I understand you. I wish you hadn't got your heart broken like that. I wish you hadn't gone down a wrong path like that. But believe me, I can take it. I can make it better than it was. Did you ever hear of that Japanese art, kintsugi? Kintsugi is when you find that pottery or a vase has been broken, and instead of just throwing it away, or instead of just gluing it together, what they do is they take resin and they sew into it powdered dust, and they create something with the brokenness that makes it more beautiful. They make a pot like this, where the cracks themselves are highlighted and they are enhanced. And they actually give value to the whole thing. So what was tragic and lost and a source of regret and pain now becomes something which you say, hey, look at this. It's amazing. It's beautiful. This is a one of a kind. This is precious. Just But here's the big idea, and then I'm going to finish. God can use singleness to build something uniquely beautiful, precious, and strong in you, even in the midst of pain, regret, and failure. And so when the Bible invites us to make an investment in our own future happiness, the Bible invites us to put boundaries on our sexual drive and desires and our behavior. When the Bible says, why don't you look to have a really positive sexual history that you can bring into that relationship that you're looking for? When the Bible says, look, let's walk on a road together, let's travel together, and allow God to make something, even in the midst of singleness, so that you don't just want to run off into the first thing that offers itself, or get into a whole load of casual encounters, when you actually have an end in mind, a vision to go for, which is beautiful, which is awesome, which many waters cannot quench love. Stronger than death. A fantastic thing. I am my beloved's. My beloved is mine. And God says to you this evening, you pray with this. God says to you, you're my beloved. You're my beloved. You're my beloved. And the way that these two people in this story feel about one another, it's a small reflection, a little tiny glimpse, a little picture of the way that I feel for you. You're my beloved. You're mine, and I am yours. And I can help you navigate this time. And wherever we get to, whether there's destination or no destination, whether the destination is quick or a long time, whether the destination has taken a few turns and some negative things that have happened to you, and yet God says, look, I can even take the brokenness, I can enhance it. So I'd like us to pray. Next week, we're going to be talking about, you know, the act of sex and what it means in itself, and the psychology, the kind of the physicality behind that, you know, what is happening to us on an emotional level as people, what gives it its power, and how does that help make relationships that are intimate and wonderfully cohesive. We'll be looking at that next week. But I want us to pray right now, so I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And I'd like, just as the band come up, I'd like to invite you, if you want to be part of this prayer, I'm going to pray a prayer. And it's a prayer saying, God, I want you to bring something beautiful, something redemptive into the lives of people here. Particularly if you're struggling with this issue, and especially if you've been hurt or broken or you've taken some wrong turns. So I'm going to pray for that, and then we're going to sing a couple more songs, and then we'll round things off. But if you'd like to be included, just as we have our eyes closed, if you want to be included in this prayer, and you want to say to God, God, please bring your work to bear in my life. I'm going to collaborate with you. Just put your hand up where you are. It's a sign that you're responding to God. Fantastic. Let's pray. Dear God, I want to pray for every single one of us. Lord, you know that singleness is hard. Well, for some it seems to be a walk in the park. For others it's just a daily grind. But I want to pray that you would help us, that you would walk us through it with you. Lord, that we would know something of your grace. And I want to pray that we would know that we're your beloved and that you help us on the journey and you help recover us when we get lost or we get broken down and we lose our way. And I pray, Lord God, for those of us that are struggling with these issues and looking to you, I want to pray for a fresh sense of faith and a fresh sense of you being with us and us being yours. In Jesus' name,